Hello, I'm Liz Curtis-Higgs. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Word by Word. In John 1:46, we read, Nazareth. Can any good thing come from there? Yes, it can. Goodness itself came from there, brought into the world by Mary of Nazareth. Welcome to Word by Word with Liz Curtis-Higgs. Each weekend, here on the Faith Radio Network, you and I look at a different biblical character. So, last time we talked about Mary of Bethany, and the weekend before that, her sister Martha. But today, we're going to chat about the most beloved of the seven Marys in the New Testament, Mary of Nazareth, the mother of Jesus. Now, if it's okay with you, I'd love to share the start of her story in the Christmas season. So we're going to save that for December. A young girl visited by an angel named Gabriel who announced that she would give birth to the Son of God. Wow, that story deserves a show of its own, I think you'd agree. And then 40 days after Jesus was born, when Mary and Joseph appeared in the temple in Jerusalem, as was required of them, the prophet Simeon was there, and he told Mary, a sword will pierce your own soul too, Luke 2:35. Also translated, yes, a long knife will cut your heart. Wow. In all that joy to hear such a painful promise of something to come. I'm guessing the burden of that prophecy surely grew heavier for Mary with each passing year. When would she feel the first prick of that sword in her heart? I'm wondering if she didn't first sense that sharp edge about a dozen years after Jesus was born. Mary, her husband Joseph, and their son Jesus were all in Jerusalem for the Passover. This was an annual trip, and it was a long, hard journey south from Galilee, about 75 miles on foot across really rough terrain. Even so, Luke 2:41 tells us, every year, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. So Jesus accompanied his parents on this annual pilgrimage. Picture this. Thousands of people from all over Israel making their way to Jerusalem. Just those from Nazareth would have made a sprawling party with carts and animals, people of all ages, and one particular growing boy right on the cusp of manhood. Luke 2:42 goes on, when he was 12 years old, they went up to the festival according to the custom. So if he's 12, Mary is now a seasoned mother. She's in her mid-20s, bound for Jerusalem according to the Jewish custom. And it's likely that she and Joseph would have remained in Jerusalem for the full 7 days. Luke continues, after the festival was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Oh my goodness, look, Mary and Joseph were not negligent parents. Jesus intentionally tarried behind, the ASV tells us, without asking permission and without his parents' knowledge, the Phillips paraphrase says. Listen, if you've ever taken a 12-year-old on a family vacation, you know exactly how this works. Your child gets distracted, sees something in a store window, or hangs back talking with a friend, and suddenly, they're nowhere to be found. Well, that's how it was as they left Jerusalem. The New Living Translation says his parents didn't miss him at first. Well, think about it. This was Jesus. He had to be the most trustworthy offspring a mother could hope for. He'd never slipped away before. Why would he start now? Thinking he was in their company, they traveled on for a day, Luke 2:44. Now, don't judge, okay? We have to get this scene. Mary and Joseph were, of course, exhausted after a week in this busy, noisy city. They were ready to get home to their quiet Nazareth. So there's that. And also the fact that they were traveling in a company. There were a lot of people. And so they supposed he was among their band of travelers. Mary and Joseph, it says, spent a whole day on the road, though probably not together. This, I think, explains how they might not have realized Jesus was missing better than anything. On long journeys like this, families divided into two groups. Women and children went in one group, and the men and the older boys went in the other group. So they were traveling, but not exactly together. And since Jesus was 12, he would have been free to travel in either group, women and children, or men and older boys. As it turned out, he traveled in neither group. Now, just imagine how his parents reacted when bedtime came and Jesus, only 12, was nowhere to be found. Can you imagine their dialogue? Well, I thought he was with you. Well, I thought he was with you. That, by the way, is the LRV, the Lizzie Revised Version. So don't look for it in the Book of Luke. It's not there. But we can hear it, husband and wife, trying hard not to blame each other and yet distraught. Then they began looking for him, Luke 2:44 goes on, among their relatives and friends. You could imagine the growing sense of panic that set in as they anxiously searched among their kinsfolk and acquaintances, other translations tell us. This was every parent's nightmare come true, a child left behind in a crowded, dangerous city. When they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. So they looked all among their friends and neighbors, and now they're back to Jerusalem, panicking. It tells us, of course, it's going to take them a while to get there. They've been traveling a whole day. The Bible doesn't describe Mary's anxiety, but I think you and I can feel it beating in our hearts. That image that we often carry of Mary and Jesus, of Madonna and child, that sweet, peaceful picture, I think is shifting into a more human portrait now. This is a real mom with real worries. You can picture Mary and Joseph asking every stranger on every crowded, winding street of Jerusalem, "Have you seen our son? Have you seen our boy?" After 3 days, they found him, Luke 2:46. 3 days with Jesus out of Mary's sight. Interesting, it's like the 3 days he would spend in the grave. There's a reason you don't find the word coincidence in the Bible. First of all, it's not there. And second of all, there is no such thing when God is involved. On the third day, young Jesus was found. Big sigh of relief. Alive and well. And here's where they found him. Luke 2:46 tells us, in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. The King James says he's sitting in the midst of the doctors, not medical doctors, but wise instructors. They were teaching from the Torah in their open-air classrooms. That's the temple courts. Jesus not only was hearing what they said and understanding what they said, we're also told he was questioning what they said and discussing deep questions with them. Wow, there's a 12-year-old boy conversing with highly educated adults. No surprise, in Luke 2:47, we learn everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. After all, this was a boy from Nazareth, of all places, impressing these men in Jerusalem with his insight and his responses, the CJB tells us. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. But this is not like the word amazed in Luke 2:47. Here in Luke 2:48, astonished, the Greek word literally means to strike with panic. They were shocked. They were overwhelmed. I have to admit, I love the Message and how it paraphrases it here. His parents were not impressed. They were upset and hurt. So while others were amazed, his parents were shocked and overwhelmed, obviously relieved to see him, but very upset. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you," Luke 2:48. It's interesting that Mary's the one who spoke up. We don't know if Joseph was so upset he couldn't even talk, or she was the one more likely to do the talking for them. But I can tell you this, There is a tone of scolding in her words, and we can tell that by looking at the other translations. The CEB says, "Listen, your father and I have been worried." The Amplified says, "Greatly distressed." And the Living Bible puts it like this, "Child, why did you do this to us?" I gotta say, as a mother of two, I am certain I have said those words at some point in my children's lives. Why did you do this to us? So she is asked a question, which makes it kind of interesting because Jesus responded with a question. "Why were you searching for me?" he asked, Luke 2:49. These are, in fact, the first recorded words of Jesus. And it's a gentle reproof. The Amplified says, "Why did you have to look for me?" In other words, as he goes on to explain, "Didn't you know I had to be in my Father's house?" So this, what I think he's saying is, why did you look everywhere? You should have known I would be in the temple, in my Father's house. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Word by Word with Liz Curtis Higgs. I think you can see why we call the show that. Word by Word. Somebody once reviewed one of my books saying, "Liz writes the Amplified of the Amplified version." And that is the truth. I do like to look at every verse in all its fullness, various translations, not to confuse, but to expand our understanding of every verse. We're learning today about Mary of Nazareth, the mother of Jesus. If you're just jumping in halfway through, you can listen again to the full teaching as a podcast on myfaithradio.com, LizCurtisHiggs.com. You'll find it there as well. On my website, it's also an easy way to connect with me on Facebook or on Twitter or on Pinterest. You can sign up for my Bible study, which will land in your inbox just once a month, I promise, so I won't inundate you with emails. I have to admit, 2018 is kind of a big year for Lizzie. It's my 25th year as a published writer. So grateful. And this month's featured book is, of course, The Women of Easter. And that's the source of today's teaching. So back to our story. At some point, all children start to pull away. And I think that's what we see happening in the temple that day, with Jesus leaving behind his parents, going back to Jerusalem, and sitting down to speak with the teachers there. For Mary, this was probably her first real inkling of the coming separation. Now, Mary knew all the prophecies about her son. We can read them recorded in Luke. Gabriel called him the Son of the Most High. Elizabeth said, "Blessed is the child you will bear." And Simeon said, "My eyes have seen your salvation." So Mary of Nazareth knew that this was no ordinary child telling her, "I must be about my father's business, dealing with his affairs." But see, for Mary, for all she knew, Jesus was talking about Joseph and his carpentry work. When he said, "my father's business," her natural inclination might have been to think of Joseph. That kind of explains what's going on here in Luke 2:50, which says, "But they did not understand what he was saying to them." This boy that they've watched growing up for 12 years, mom and dad, Mary and Joseph, still confused. Now, Mary believed that Jesus was the Messiah. We know that. And someday that he would have the throne of his ancestor David. But I'm wondering if Mary didn't think he was going to end up in a royal palace rather than in a temple. Well, with Jesus, then he went down, Jesus did, to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. He remained subject to them. That is, friends, no small thing. Having just been with these very wise men and astounding them with his wisdom, now he's going to be content to be a carpenter when he could have been among the scholars, living in obscurity in Nazareth now for 18 years. And yet, Jesus was in the very center of his Father's will. This is such a lesson for me, and I hope for all of us. If we sense that something is missing in our lives, we could be doing more. Maybe what's missing is God. Putting him at the very center and resting in his will for our lives. So much easier said than done. And yet here is Jesus, by example, showing us it can be done. Of course, Mary had to be grateful to have her son by her side all those years. Even if she didn't fully understand him, she fully loved him. Luke 2:51 says, "But his mother treasured all these things in her heart." You know, we've heard that phrase before on a certain Christmas night when the shepherds looked for a Messiah in a manger and then told everyone what they saw and what they heard. It says of Mary in Luke 2:19, "Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart." And so now, years later, his mother treasured all these things in her heart. Also translated, deep within herself, she stored up all these things. She cherished every word like a secret treasure. Boy, does that sum up who Mary of Nazareth is. She believed in her son. She supported him. She trusted him. She stood by him. Luke 2:52 says, "And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man." Of course, spiritually, his divine nature was perfect, fully formed. But physically, his human attributes had to develop. I mean, he was not born walking and talking and quoting the Old Testament. He had to grow in body and mind, the Phillips paraphrase tells us, growing wiser and more mature, advanced in wisdom and age and grace with God and men. So Jesus, as a boy, was strengthening his muscles, studying the Torah, working with Joseph, and helping Mary, his mother, all through his teens. It is impressive. Well, the next time we meet Mary of Nazareth, we're in the book of John, chapter 2, and a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. So you got a picture of a very lively group here, seated on benches, wine cups in hand, enjoying the festivities. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine," John 2:3. Now here's the thing, running out of wine was a social disaster, but especially at a wedding. So this host was on the brink of embarrassment. That's why Jesus' mother came to him with the problem. Here's how Jesus responds. Please notice again, it's a question. He is, after all, rabbi, and rabbis are known for asking questions, and Jesus certainly did that. John 2:4, he says, "Woman, why do you involve me?" It sounds a bit sharp, but understand that woman was a very respectful form of address in that culture. Maybe a better translation, the NIRV says, "Dear woman, why are you telling me about this?" Then he explained his concern. "My hour has not yet come." In Greek, it's literally "the hour of me." Wow. Well, she thought her son was ready to act and to be revealed. Nope. He plainly said, "The time for me to show who I really am isn't here yet." I love how Mary handled this. His mother said to the servants, not to Jesus. Notice she didn't actually answer his question. She said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you," John 2:5. So wisely, Mary left the decision in Jesus' hands. The NASB says, "Whatever he says to you, do it." So she is acquiescing to Jesus. She's not stealing his thunder, putting him in an awkward position. She is handing it over and saying, "Okay, I have opened a door, but Lord, you don't have to walk through it. You take over." Wise mom. So Jesus said to the servants, John 2:7 tells us, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim, up to the very top. I want you to imagine these obedient servants watching this clear water change into wine before their eyes. And don't you love that Jesus made sure the least of these were the ones to see his first miracle? It's so like him. He thinks of everybody in the room. He sees everyone, acknowledges the value of everyone. Well, when the master of the banquet tasted the wine and, of course, remarked at how good it was, interesting, no one in the household pointed to Jesus, but Mary knew what happened. and so did his disciples. So John 2:11 tells us what Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. Two important things there. This was a way for Jesus to reveal his glory, his wonder works. The Amplified says his wonder works, all one word, delicious, began that day as he demonstrated his power and showed his divine greatness. But then that last phrase, and his disciples believed in him. See, his motivation for his miracles was always the same. He wanted people to put their faith in him. So it was about glorifying his Father in heaven, and it was about people putting their faith in Jesus. Well, that day in Cana, Jesus actually chose to do his mother's will, but even more, to honor his Father's will. Mary also revealed something about herself to us. We see her now as a mature and a self-assured woman. She's no longer a young virgin, meek and mild. She had a faith that was honed by experience and by expectation. And like any mother in any century, she encouraged her son to use his gifts that day at the wedding. Now, you'll notice that his earthly father, Joseph, is not mentioned in the scene at Cana. Certainly, he would have gone to the wedding with his wife if he were still living. It's one of the reasons that many scholars believe that by this point, Joseph is deceased, leaving Mary a widow. Well, when the time came to travel to Jerusalem for the Passover, I wonder if that sword that Simeon had warned Mary about began to pierce her innermost being. Did Mary have a sense of the danger Jesus was facing? Did she know, as only a mother can? Probably the most famous verse in the Bible, John 3:16, tells us, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son." Mary of Nazareth gave her son too. That crown of thorns that pressed into his brow surely pierced her heart as deeply as any sword. On that day they call Good Friday, Mary was there. John 19:25 tells us, near the cross of Jesus stood his mother. Can you not feel her heart breaking as she watched her son, scourged and beaten and mocked, and now this, nailed to a cross? Whenever a mother sees her child suffer, I think we long to take their place. I'm sure that's true for a father as well. I can only speak as a mom. I can't bear to see my children even have a cold, you know, or be, let alone be in the hospital, have something really serious. But imagine this. Her young son, 33 years old. We don't know how Mary felt, but it's not too hard to climb into her heart and imagine it. We do know that others are with her. There's some comfort in that, isn't there? His mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. Most of all, of course, God was with her. God the Father and God the Son. When Jesus saw his mother there, oh, how did he bear it? How did she bear it? And the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, John 19:26 continues. So his beloved disciple John, the only one of his 11 men who were named among the witnesses that day. That's a whole nother story. Where were the disciples? We know what happened to Judas. Here's John, but what about the other 10? Looking at Mary and John, Jesus finally spoke. He said to her, "Woman, here is your son." Also translated, "Dear woman, dear lady." It's very personal, very relational. His love for his mother is abundantly clear. He assured her she's not alone, that she's cared for, provided for, loved. "Behold thy son." This man, the CEV says, this man is now your son. See, Mary had a new son because the son of her womb would soon be gone. And then Jesus spoke directly to John and to the disciple, "Here is your mother." John 19:27. Even to the end, Jesus fulfilled one of the greatest of the Ten Commandments, honor your mother and father. Protect and provide for her, Jesus told John. She is now your mother. From that time on, this disciple took her into his home. Well, this Gospel of John's was written near the end of his life, so we know the Lord's final request was honored. John took Mary not only into his house, but also into his heart. The message says, from that moment, the disciple accepted her as his own mother. I think, just as the Lord intended. You've been listening to Word by Word with Liz Curtis Higgs. Listen again on the podcast, myfaithradio.com or lizcurtishiggs.com. You'll also find a short Bible study guide there I wrote to go along with today's teaching. Next weekend, we're going to celebrate Palm Sunday as we walk through that scene, word by word. Thanks for listening today. We'll see you then. Thanks for listening to Word by Word. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. Why not share this audio link with a friend? And take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player so you never miss an edition of Word by Word with Liz Curtis Higgs.